I'm just telling you.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Capital Program Planning and Real Estate Committee to order, please. I know we have a very tight schedule. I know we have a couple of our members are returning from a quick break. Let's go ahead and get things started. First, I'd like to move our first item of business is to approve the agenda. Does anyone have any suggested changes or modifications?
Okay, we need a Virginia.
We are in pause until Mr. Spegberg returns.
So who? Yeah, do some information stuff.
Okay, great. Yeah. Let's go ahead and turn then to going ahead and get Mr. Thomas started. First, we have two issues of information on this. First is about the capital needs inventory. The CNI provides an unconstrained prioritized list of Metro's capital needs over the next 10 years and will be coordinated with Metro's ongoing maintenance capital expenses to provide a holistic overarching picture of the authority's total capital requirements. Next, the committee will receive an update on one of Metro's significant capital projects, which is the replacement of radio infrastructure throughout the Metro system, which will also provide the infrastructure for the cellular neutral host system. Now I'll turn to Mr. Thomas, who is our acting chief engineer, to review the CNI. Mr. Thomas?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Pleasure to be here today to give you another update on where we are on our capital needs inventory. If you recall, we did an update for where we were back in July. So here's our agenda. We've broken this sort of into three pieces. We're going to sort of give you a context and overview. We'll try not to dive too much into process here and just sort of give you a snapshot of where we are. We now have some outputs from the process. We'll go through that next, and then we'll get a little bit into project management. Briefly, in the past, what we did for the current capital funding agreement to identify what we were going to do was we did a combination of call for projects and professional judgment. We're doing a much more rigorous process this time around to develop a capital needs inventory. We're doing it based upon an asset inventory of everything that we own. And then currently it's on an age-based assessment for its condition and using a scoring methodology for a prioritization. And then I'll get a little bit more into that in the next slide. And then the third column there is showing you where we plan to be in about 2 years. So where we have, so far we've identified about 75,000 assets, which seems like an awful lot, but when you actually look at the database, you'll find that it's, you know, sort of broad-brushed listing of items that doesn't get necessarily down into much of the detail. What we have primarily for each of those assets is an age-based assessment of whether or not it should be replaced. So it's fundamentally, if it's 40 years old, it's considered to be at or near past its useful life. If it's 10 years old, it's not. That's not based upon people's putting eyes on it and professional judgment. But that's where we are today in this process. You can see that we're using the prioritization, the third column there, safety, regulatory compliance, service delivery, and ridership. Impacts is the methodology we're using, the standards we're using for prioritization. And then we have the fourth thing, which is existing versus new assets. And that's obviously everything that we own today, but then there are some things that are new that we've put into the program that we believe need to be performed as well. So where we expect to be in about 2 years is have a much larger list of items. That 75,000 will grow probably by leaps and bounds, order of magnitude. But also what we will do have by then is an actual assessment, physical assessment of the condition of the thing. So just because it's 40 years old, it actually may be in really good shape and therefore not in need of any attention at this within the next capital program, and the 10-year-old thing might be in need of that. So that's where we expect to be in about 2 years. So what we're teeing this program up to do here is, and on this slide, what we're trying to do is set ourselves up to have essentially two views of how we're going to do take care of what we own. The lower area that's in the blues and the reds are what I like to call steady state. Those are the things that are always going to be there. We're always going to be doing them. The example that I always use is we're always going to be replacing a certain number of ties every year. That's a steady state kind of work that we're always going to be doing. And we'll have there's a whole host of those kinds of things that are always going to be there for us to remain in a state of good repair. And above that, in the rectangular box, are those things that are going to come out of the CNI, which are asset replacements. Eventually, those things that get the regular attention will eventually have to be replaced. So that's one area. Major rehabilitation, if it's beyond its normal sort of routine maintenance. And then newly identified needs, and then there's always mandates that come from various locations. One of the examples that I'll give you as a newly identified need is a project we did a couple years ago. Many of our older underground stations that have a single entrance have a single pair of escalators going from the mezzanine to the platform. So there's one way up, one way down. But there are many locations in the system where we built into the mezzanine the capacity to add additional vertical transportation. There's essentially a hole in the mezzanine. So a few years ago, we went up to Bethesda Station, which was a single entrance sort of configuration, and we added a set of stairs between the mezzanine and the platform. It ended up costing the neighborhood of $400,000, but it does two things. It provides another path for people to get off the platform to get up to the mezzanine or vice versa, whether for convenience or in case of an emergency. But another significant advantage to that, when our elevator and escalator people go in and do an escalator replacement, you've often seen where we have just a single escalator that is in off mode and it works for both directions. But when we went into Bethesda and put those stairs in, we now have another path for people to get up and down from the platform to the mezzanine and not depending upon that single escalator when we're doing a replacement. So that's the kind of thing that we see going into the newly identified needs as part of the CNI, as opposed to replacing or rehabbing the infrastructure that we have. So the next slide shows what we've done to date. We've got a lot of information on identifying the vehicles, the guideways, and the systems. And we're getting close on the other systems, facilities, and stations. And again, this is at a high level, and there's a slide coming up a little bit. We'll talk a little bit more about what I mean by high level. But that's sort of where we are today. There's been a lot of work done in the 6 months that we've been spending on this, but we've got a lot more work to do to get to a more robust list of information and have it be really meaningful for us. So when we're planning to come back in December to provide another update, and this is sort of a snapshot of what we're going to have. It'll be taking the inventory that we have today, making sure that there's a logic to what's there, there's a methodology to how we're going to present it, and it'll provide us enough information for prioritization at a broad scale. What we've done so far is we've identified in a neighborhood of $39 billion of assets. That's sort of the sum of everything that we own and assigning a replacement value to that. That's a pretty large number, but it is the thing about it is it's actually the cost of the thing. So if we're going to replace the thing, that's not the cost of replace. That doesn't include the soft costs associated with replacing a thing. So if there's $100 million bridge rehab, you know, that's in there, that doesn't include the other costs, the design costs, the management costs, and so forth. So this $39 billion is just the cost of our stuff that we have today, which is a pretty significant number. On the next slide, now we're going to get into just a snapshot of the database that we have of information with the priorities ranking. And I alluded earlier to the broad brush, the way this is. And so if you look at, if you can see it, item 2 says track work, AHR. What that means is it's track work for the A line, and the A line is from Metro Center out to Shady Grove, and the HR is heavy rail. And if you look over on the right, it says quantity of 273,000. What that means is there's 273,000 linear feet between Metro Center and the tail of Shady Grove. The reality is what that's referring to is both tracks, so 273,000 divided by two, but you see that it says 27 elements. Obviously, in 26 miles of railroad, there are a lot more than 27 elements. So that's the purpose of showing this here, is to say that we've got some good information, you know, at a broad scale, but it doesn't mine down yet to get into the details of everything that's within that 26 miles on both tracks. So just wanted to just give you a sense of what that means as an example of where we are in terms of the scale of what we're getting into. So this is just a snapshot of some of the newly identified needs or mandates that are in the CNI as of right now. Penta, actually, we're hoping to have that implemented here in the next few months, which is the communication where it's text to voice for the OCC, so they'll be able to get information out, you know, without the variability of the individual speakers. But then you can see these are, again, some other items that we've identified that are in there or that are new items. The mandates are, you know, the tunnel smoke detection, which is an FTA requirement that they've asked us to take care of. So this, we show this as a circular process because this is, you know, where we are, but this is an ongoing thing. So when we finally have a product that's a great level of detail in 2 years, and the two-year time frame is tied to an FTA requirement to have an asset inventory program in place, you know, to their satisfaction, and we believe we'll be there in 2 years. But after that is done, this is a process that we should be going through on an annual basis to make sure that we're keeping after and paying attention to all of the assets that we have. But as you can see, where we are 6 months in is early in the process. So we just want to make sure everybody understands that when we come back in December, we're not going to have a list of everything that we own, an inspection-based assessment of everything that we own, so we can understand everything that we need to fund in terms of replacements or repairs. So one of the things that we're going to do differently going forward on the project management side, in the current CIP, when a project was established in there and it was funded, and I'll use a bus garage, one of the new bus garages, for example. When we put the bus garage for Cinderbed, which is the replacement of Royal Street, in there, we put in $100 million in round figures over the course of several years, even though we were at the sort of the pre-development phase of that project. Well, as that project went on, you know, we found there were issues that we had. We had a lawsuit that delayed the project for 2 years. We've had problems with permitting being issued. So that project showed, you know, certain expectation of expenditures over in the early phases that just didn't come to fruition because we just weren't mature enough with the knowledge of that project to be able to predict that accuracy of expenditures. So as the board was getting updates on the capital program over the years, we were showing a lot of underspending. We had many projects that were in that kind of situation where they were being delayed by, you know, third party or lawsuits or so forth and so on, which sort of, you know, frustrated everybody that we were underspending. So what we're going to do for those projects going forward under the new policy and practices is when there's a new bus garage or a new thing, what we're going to do is we're going to fund the pre-development project costs first. You know, the few million dollars to get us through whatever we have to go through from a regulatory standpoint, environmental assessment, permitting, coordination with utilities, and advance the design to a higher level of completion so we can also know what the thing is going to cost as well. So we'll have a better handle on the time frame for implementation as well as the cost associated with it So when we get through those, the pre-development phases, we will then, if the project is still worthy of doing, we will then fund it from that point on with a more accurate number and a more accurate spend rate. So we think that'll help us in terms of representing how we're doing on spending on these major capital projects. And this is some of the things we're going to use for an evaluation, you know, as we're going through the pre-development phase. It's a long laundry list and probably is not complete, but it gives you a sense of the rigor that we're going to go through before our project goes into the program as a $100 million project. It'll show up as a $2 million project or a $3 million project until we get through these kind of evaluations through the pre-development phase. So one of the things we wanted to chat about here briefly was on these pages, this page and this page. This is sort of an overview of the investment categories of where we are this fiscal year, the proposed for next fiscal year, and then the out years beyond that. And one of the things that we're seeing right now for FY18 as it relates to with the CNI is the FY18 capital budget is probably one way to describe it is oversubscribed. So the fact that we are in an early stage in the development of the CNI, which eventually will feed into the CIP, is not the worst thing in the world simply because there doesn't look to be much capacity in FY18 to be able to fund any new initiatives. Obviously, if something comes out of the analyses that we're doing and the prioritization that it's, you know, a critical life safety item, we will fund that and get that taken care of. But the other sort of getting us to state of good repair items that are going to come out of that process are not likely to be able to be funded in FY18 just because of the things that are in various stages of process and commitment that have got us subscribed to a pretty significant number next year. And this is just a breakdown of one of the a portion of one of the categories on the previous slide. So going forward, so we have a draft of the list today. We're going to continue to work on that and develop it and refine it. We'll come back to the board the end of the year with an update of where we are. And then we're going to dive deeper, and we actually have consultants that are getting on board now to help us do condition assessments for our facilities and systems. So we're going to spend a good portion of the next year and even into 18 refining the list of items that are on the CNI, breaking them down into more you know, manageable bites, and also doing an assessment of those items. Excuse me. And then in 18 and beyond, it becomes a sort of an annual thing that we need to be doing to make sure that we don't fall into disrepair. And that's the end of the presentation.
Mr. Thomas, thank you. Before we turn to committee discussion, do any of the members of the committee have any additional items for the agenda? If not, I'll approve the agenda as listed, and let's turn to committee discussion. Any questions for Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Chair. Ms. Pepper. Mr. Thomas, something you just said, bringing in consultants now to, mm-hmm. to help look at this. So up to this point, is this report strictly staff-led, or was there input from FTA or other outside parties in development of this initial report?
So there have been some consultant support, so now the consultants to which I was referring are essentially inspectors to help us with the condition assessment. The consultants that we've had so far have been helping us with the program and setting up the methodology for how we're going to analyze the assets. Is that a fair assessment?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Costa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the update. At the risk of sounding like Captain Obvious, the work that you're doing really serves as the underpinning to really make folks more confident that we know what we need to do in the coming years. And so this is terrific work. I'm glad we're doing it before FTA is requiring it. but I would submit that we actually need to do it well before FTA requires it for the initial reason about confidence building. I want to understand, because you've essentially presented two major initiatives. One is a deep dive really into the assets to understand what the needs are in a different kind of detail than in the past. That will take 2 years. But there's also an initiative related to project readiness. They're connected, but they're different. What I'd like to understand is, I know this will take 2 years to get to completion, but we'll have two capital programs proposed, one in the coming months for 18, and a year from now, 19. And you will not have completed all of this work. So I think it'd be good for everyone to understand how you think this fall and next year's proposal for 19 will be informed by this work, both the CNI work and the project readiness work. And to lead the witness, I hope on the project readiness work, that will be executed sooner than the CNI work is fully completed. That's probably not clear, but you will make it clear, right?
So on the latter, on the project readiness, in this current fiscal year, we have a project called Bladensburg Rebuild. Maybe not exactly that, but it's intended to be the rebuild of Bladensburg Bus Garage. When you look at the line item in there, you see a little bit of money this year, and then there's some money in the out years, but it is not the full amount of money needed for that project. So we've already, with the current budget, and then obviously in next budgets, when it's those types of projects that we know that have a lot of pre-development work, we've already moved to budgeting to reflect, let's get smarter about what it is before we completely fund it, show it as a funding all the way out into the tail in the latter years.
So the capital program proposal this fall, you've already started to implement the new project planning?
Actually, we did last year because it's in FY17 for one of the projects. So okay. We will continue that practice of not oversubscribing the program with projects that we know have that a lot of that work, upfront work.
Great. That's good news. Thanks. On the CNI?
On the CNI, again, I think that FY18's budget seems to be so oversubscribed that we're not sure that there's going to be much that comes out of this process that's going to feed into that. Those things that we identify that we already don't know that are, you know, fire life safety critical that I get identified, we'll find a place for them. I mean, we have to. And we just learned something just the other day about some falling concrete at Northern Bus Garage. It's not funded anywhere right now, but we know whatever it is that we've got to do to fix that situation, we're going to fix it. So when those needs arise, we're going to take care of those. But in terms of any sort of new major initiatives, it doesn't seem like 18 is going to offer any opportunity to add much to what's in there today. Next fall, depending on how 19 looks, we'll be in a much more mature situation in terms of our analysis of what we have and what we need, and I expect that we'll be able to have the 19 budget be a lot more informed by what this product is going to give to us.
Thanks. I have one more quick question just to make sure I understand. I think it's slide 6. I think it was a good graphic, but I want to make sure I understand it. Here we go. I'll make a statement. You can tell me whether I understand what you're saying. How much you fund in maintenance and repair has a significant impact on how big the rectangle above it is, I'm assuming, because if you're doing enough maintenance and repair, then you might not need to replace assets so quickly or do major rehab as quickly. So it's important. They're not mutually exclusive kinds of issues. One has an impact on another. So I think the question that we'll continue to ask is to ensure that we understand that connection between maintenance and repair levels and whether they're adequate so that we're not building too large of a rectangle and a need above. Is that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is where we're going to get to. I don't think necessarily we're there today.
Right.
So eventually, you know, when we get into a, you know, regular, you know, paying attention to everything, that the box up above will be smaller, and, you know, it's going to be bigger now. Eventually, it's going to be smaller because if you're taking care of the thing, you're not letting it fall into disrepair prematurely. And therefore, it's the replacement or the major rehabilitation of that thing will be further out and therefore won't go into that box above.
So in other words, based on the work you're doing today, your knowledge and confidence on how big the blue and the red are in out years gets better and better.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And all the initiatives that we're doing, you know, pay attention to what we have, that Mr. Wiedefeld's putting in place for us, are going to help us get to that point where we're getting ahead of things and not reacting to things.
Okay, thanks. Just wanted to make sure that I understood that.
Ms. Goldman. Mr. Chair, I'm not a member of your committee, but I did want to ask a few questions and see how
your
this
presence
process.
And your wisdom and your questions are always welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just to follow up on Mr. Costa's questions, I'm trying to understand how this capital needs inventory will work into the work of the Finance Committee as it considers the capital budget for this coming year, FY18. And so in your next steps, you indicate that there's a phase one CNI report, which you're going to produce by November. First question is, does that have any impact on the budgeting process for the capital improvement program for FY2018?
Only to the extent that we find a fire life safety issue that needs immediate attention, or near-term attention.
Okay, so, but in general, in terms of the big picture, we shouldn't look to that as providing any special solution. Or
not a magic bullet at this point.
No,
right.
Magic bullet there.
Right.
Okay. The second question, which maybe it's I should address to the general manager, but I'll address it to both of you. Where in this process do you begin your negotiation with the jurisdictions on the capital funding agreement for FY18 and the out years? Is that in any way related to this CNI process, or do you have a date when you'll begin that process, since that will obviously impact the board's deliberation on it?
Again, the CNI is just another means of giving us better information, and again, we're at the beginning stages then, so we all recognize that. So in the budget that I propose, the capital budget that I propose in December, in effect, will be, I think that's the starting point for that negotiation. But again, I think what John said is, look, 18 is pretty much, we have a lot of stuff that's moving now. It's moving in 18, so there's not a whole lot, again, unless something comes up that we haven't seen. But we don't see anything significant out there, so it's a continuation of the program. You know, it's the 7,000 series, it's the bus buys, it's, you know, those things that are underway. And that's why we think, again, as this into the next year, as we get a little bit more information, as, in effect, the capacity is starting to open up more. But we have a sense, you're going to have a sense of what the level is going out. In these out years, there are going to be levels. You know, there'll be examples of types of projects. We know this type of work continues into the future, but we don't want to say, now for that project, it's at this point of money. I think that's just unrealistic. And most capital program does not do that. It's usually a current year and a budget year, and the other ones are more planning years. And so we want to instill that into the whole capital programming process.
So is your objective still to negotiate a multi-year capital funding agreement with the jurisdictions?
I think so. I think the jurisdictions helps the jurisdictions to, you know, obviously think ahead. Again, it's not like these things are going to disappear. We know the scale of what we're up against. So I think for those negotiations to occur now, I think it's important for the PREA funding to make sure that we're lining up for that as well, and also post-PREA funding. As we start to think, as that ends, it'll end in that cycle. So we want to force ourselves to think through that, I think, as well at the same time.
So the capital needs survey will more address capital needs in some out years, FY 20, 21, 22, in that period, rather than the more immediate FY 18 and FY 19?
Yes. Again, it's providing the, you know, the fundamental level first, based on age assessment only, not physical condition. And that's where John's talking about. That's the larger lift. And again, that's a mandate that we have to hit in 2 years. So we forced as much as we could for this cycle. We're going to keep pushing for the next one. And then even after that, we have to, and then gets to an annual process.
Thank you. I think that helps scope out what the Finance Committee has to do for the next few months. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Meckberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I have one question going back to the slide with the blue and the red, maintenance and repairs. And to Mr. Costa's point, I understand that red line, we obviously want to the red mm-hmm. section to be smaller and mm-hmm. somewhat consistent. But just a point of information, when you look at 21, 22, it's actually, well, especially 21, it actually grows. So why is that? At this point, you know, you'll have Safe Track, you'll have the surges hopefully completed, and so why would it jump in that year and in 22 still be larger? It should be, again, to Tony's point, it should, at that point, you would think it would start to shrink as opposed to grow.
This is just an illustration. It's not indicating that we have any numbers. It's just, what we didn't want to show is a solid line at the same level for blue and red. We wanted to indicate that it's going to be a variable depending upon what we learn.
Okay.
So it's not.
So you're not anticipating.
No, not necessarily. But we just wanted to show that this is not, it's always going to be two and then the other one's going to be one. It was wanted to let you know that it's variable over the course of the years depending on what we know and learn.
Okay. I know, I was just sort of curious why mm-hmm. that was a big jump there. There's something you know that we don't.
No. Not at this point.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for the presentation. I'm assuming this information is the information we're going to be supplying to Jeff and Dennis as they prepare their 10-year plan. And you're, I'm sure, familiar with the 10-year plan that was given to the board last at our last board meeting that outlines the capital needs for the system. Mm-hmm. For the next 10 years, an $18 billion number that is really a $12 billion number because we don't have the capacity to do an $18 billion. I assume this is that information that is going to update what's already there.
No,
this is not.
It's a continuation of that. Basically, what they did is they looked at old information that we had, right, and took
yeah.
pieces of that to create, Jeff
yeah.
did to create his model. This now provides more information on that. And as it progresses, we get more detail to get into that, because that's what he said. He said, look, you know,
right.
this is what we know today, and that they're doing the CNI, and so they'll get more this fall. We'll get more after that, more detail. But his key point was that basically, regardless of what you eventually put in those buckets, they're very large numbers that we have to address, and then you got to look at the production capability, so that ratchets that down. And then his other major point is now you have to start thinking as a finance person, all right, how do you finance something like this?
Right.
These things last for 30, 40, 50 years. Do you have mechanisms in place to, in effect, do that rather than do it annually? I think
mm-hmm.
that was his major points in his presentation.
Yeah. So this is going to give us, so I can understand this, the projects that we need to do over the next 10 years and how much they're going to cost.
It's going to give you another snapshot of basically the types of projects that we need to do.
Okay.
We're trying to back away from committing to dollars because, as John mentioned, I think that's where we've gotten into issues before. That's why we want to create this development program
sure.
where we put in projects. We know that there's a large project out there, but we don't want to say that we're going to do it in 2024 at this number when we haven't done any of the engineering and all that work. So what we're going to do is identify those projects, put them into that. But you, for the scale that we're talking about, it gives you the scale. And I think that's
yeah.
what we've had in the past. It'll get more refined. But the numbers, as we all know, are huge, just like they're huge. If you look at the education infrastructure or LAIFS infrastructure, you know, that's just the nature of the beast for sure.
Yeah. So and my final question is, when Jeff made his presentation, he said that he was expecting numbers in November, which kind of fits with what you put up there. So what we really need to have when we go to Congress and the surrounding jurisdictions is there's always a lot of pushback. And the governors, et cetera, always, the answer is, it's not specific enough, so I'm not going to give you the money. You know, there's always a reason not to give money. So by November, will we have the specificity to be able to put into the model so that when we present this model, we can say, this is what the money's for. And I won't run into the situation of people saying, that's a big number and you can't tell me how you're going to spend it.
We will be able to basically identify the types of assets that need to be done. We have basically some industry numbers around some of those things.
Yeah.
So you know buses, you know rail cars,
right.
you know. So you can come up with a very defensible number.
Okay.
Because you know the asset is running out.
Yeah.
You know, so I think we get to that level. But again, we're not getting at an engineering level. That's not what
right.
we're doing. We're not building a 10-year capital program. That's not what we're doing. We're building a 2-year capital program that we can all agree to. And then the out years that we agree these are the types of projects we have to get to. And here's a scale of them. But now let's go do the detail and find out what we're committing to.
Okay. And my last comment then is, Paul, you made a very good point yesterday for those who weren't there. When asked by one of the governors, if this was a business, what would you do? And Paul pointed out, we have a $40 billion asset, right? A $40 billion asset. So if I had a $40 billion asset, I would do all I could to maintain the asset, right? And that was your comment, which I thought was an excellent comment back to the governors who were giving us a lot of pushback on why they didn't think we had to invest in this. It's a $40 billion asset that we are allowing to go to wreck and ruin. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Costa, you had another question?
I have a question. But it feels to me, for folks who aren't in this business, this is like the home inspection that you do when you're buying a house. You know you have a 15-year-old furnace, and you know that you're going to need to replace it in 6 or 7 years because that's how long furnaces last. And so you stick a number in there based on that replacement value, but you know technology might change, you know your needs might change, and so the number might change. But if we can start to have the conversation in that kind of way, that number in year 6 represents a replacement value, and then when folks start to say, well, are you sure that that's the kind of furnace you need? The answer is no. We don't know if that's the kind of furnace we need 6 or 7 years from now. We just know, because we're doing good planning, that we'll need to do something. And as the years go by and we do better project development work, we'll test the technology. We'll give you a better number when we're ready to actually ask you for funding. And so I think that's the rhythm that we're talking about, and hopefully we'll begin to get that story across in that way. So it's not really a question.
No, actually, it's a great comment. Thank you, Mr. Costa. I appreciate that and your leadership on this issue as well. Any further questions for Mr. Thomas or the rest of the team regarding the CNI? Thank you very much. We appreciate it, Mr. Thomas. Now we'll turn to our second information item with Mr. Wonder regarding the radio and cellular infrastructure replacement update. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, distinguished members of this committee. Thank you for having me here today. I want to spend a little time with you this morning to give you an update on the radio and cellular infrastructure replacement project, give you some background about the project, the scope of work, talk about some of the timelines, and hopefully help answer any questions that you might have. The benefits of this project, at the end when it's done, will help improve access throughout the system. It'll enhance our reliability, and most importantly, it'll bring Wilmot in compliance with two acts of Congress. First is the Federal Rail Safety Improvement Act that was passed in 2008, which requires Metro to provide customer service with wireless access. And then the Middle Class Tax Relief and Job Creation Act, February 22nd of 2012, which requires all public agencies to vacate their T-band frequencies within 10 years. To give you a little bit information about the work that needs to be done as part of the project, I've kind of broken this down into three primary elements. The first element to talk about is the above ground work that needs to be done. In order to build a new radio system, we have to put up new tower sites throughout the operating area. We anticipate that we're going to have a total of 28 sites scattered around the area. 22 of those will be co-located on existing buildings or towers. Six of them will be new tower sites that we will build at various yard facilities throughout the area. And then we're also going to look at our 70-plus buildings to provide supplemental coverage. For the below ground, we have over 100 miles of underground tunnel that's going to require over 400 miles of infrastructure that needs to be put in. We'll be touching all the tunnel right-of-way, vent shafts, stations, and comm rooms. Then the third phase is to get actual radios installed in all of our fleet vehicles, which includes all of our rail revenue vehicles and non-revenue vehicles, our bus revenue vehicles and non-revenue vehicles, and all of our MTPD police fleets. Then we also have to distribute close to about 6,000 portable radios to all of our users throughout the authority. For the above ground work, first the contractor has to determine the tower locations where these sites are going to be located. Then our land group will have to reach out to those property owners and try and secure site leases for them. Once done, we can move the sites into construction, start applying for permits, look at any zoning issues for the new tower sites that we have, and then actually start site construction. And then we'll finish by putting the entire network on air once all the infrastructure is complete. At the same time, we'll also be looking to try and start the installation of the mobile vehicles in all of our vehicle fleets. This will provide coverage for our entire metro operating area. And we will go through and evaluate our in-building coverage in all our buildings and garages on a case-by-case basis. To talk a little bit about the work involved to get the underground portion of the work complete, create a little graphic representation for you. We're going to be utilizing all of our work trains and special high-rail vehicles to help us access various parts of the tunnel. In order to get this system up, we first have to put a cable management system throughout all of the underground. We're installing this along the third rail side of the tunnel to give us ease of access for install. Excuse me. Then we have to install two radiating cables, one for our radio network and one for the cellular carriers to utilize for their backbone. We have to install fiber optic cabling and power cabling throughout the underground to service the equipment and to provide the backbone for communications. Our crews, our internal WMATA crews, are working with the carrier consortium also to help them get their equipment placed down in the vent shafts to complete the communication in the tunnel sections. And then our radio contractor will go through all of the stations and put the amplifier systems in there to complete. Our crews, because the work involves accessing the right-of-way, our internal crews will be doing all the installation for the radio equipment in chefs. So you see, there's quite a bit of work in order to get the radio system up. We brought in an outside consultant, Parsons Transportation, to help evaluate the project to see if there were ways that we could expedite it. They came in, they spent some time with our project teams and field crews to understand our processes and methodologies, and then they looked at three comparable projects throughout the U.S., one Chicago Transit Authority, one in Massachusetts, and another one Port Authority of New York, New Jersey. Each of those were taking on similar cellular or radio projects of various sizes, but were as close as they could and comparable to the size and scope that we have. From those evaluations, they gave us a list of recommendations that we can utilize to help increase our productivity. From that, based off of production rates, looking at crew service, and then comparing other projects that are going on, including SafeTrack, we developed a schedule that we are now sharing with you to give you an idea of how we're going to roll out the underground communications in the system. We have started with a pilot area to kind of test our methodologies, which is from Glenmont to Silver Spring. We're currently in the process of completing that. We also have a small section from Potomac Avenue to Stadium Armory that we actually expect to have on air with cellular service by the end of November. From there, we'll move through to Metro Center to Potomac Avenue, which we expect to have complete the latter part of 2017, and then from there through Benning Road to Largo Town Center. Again, a short section, latter part of 2017. College Park to Gallery Place will be the next section, delivered by the summer of 2018. Union Station to DuPont Circle, followed by the end of the summer. Metro Center to Roslyn by that end of September. Roslyn to Ballston by the end of the year of 2018. Pentagon to King Street in April of 19. Gallery Place to Southern Avenue by the end of 19. And DuPont Circle to Medical Center and Grosvenor to Whiteflint, wrapping out the year in 2020. It is important to note that we are looking at ways to try to continue to expedite the schedule as possible.
If I could just add one important point on this chart, the cell phone availability, excuse me, is when we give it to the cell phone carriers, correct?
Actually, the infrastructure installation complete date is the day when we anticipate having all of the infrastructure complete for the cellular carriers. The cell phone availability is the estimated date of delivery for the actual cell portion of the system. Now, WMATA doesn't have any control of that, but we are working closely with the cellular consortium to make sure that they get access down there with us so that they can finish hooking up their equipment to meet these dates.
Okay, but the point is we don't control that date. It's eventually
correct.
At the cell phone carrier.
That's entirely up to the carriers, I mean, yes. To date, we actually have close to 30% of the tunnel design work complete, and we actually have over 20% of the cable management system installed along the third rail site. And we also have about 1.5% of the total amount of radiating and fiber optic cabling that's installed through various sections of the tunnel. The first areas that we expect to have cellular availability will be from Potomac Avenue to Stadium Armory by the end of the year, and then Glenmont to Silver Springs by the spring of 2017. To understand the complexity of this project, wanted to talk a little bit about some of the interdependencies that we have in order to bring all of this together. Our internal crews, while doing all of the infrastructure right away, we are dependent on the cell carriers to provide us with materials and to get those to us in a timely fashion in order to meet those scheduled dates. So there's a lot of coordination with them. And then as well, we're also coordinating to bring their equipment down into the tunnel system. So there's a lot of work there to bring those two pieces together. For the 7-800 megahertz tunnel communications, again, we're completing that work internally to get the backbone infrastructure in. And then we're bringing in a contractor that's building the rest of the radio system to analyze the work that we've performed in the tunnel, help us identify any deficiencies, and then so we can go in and take any corrective actions that are needed before we finally bring everything on air. For the equipment, the radio contractor is actually providing us with the bidirectional amplifiers. We are then going out to a systems integrator to help us integrate these amplifiers into a cabinet, which in essence we're trying to plug and play a device that will allow quick installation down into the tunnel vent shafts and hopefully minimize the amount of time that we need on track to get that piece of work done. But we are reliant on the radio contractor and the systems integrator to be able to get those pieces back to us so that our internal crews can complete the installation. We are also reliant on our work with the various jurisdictions throughout the area to bring on the 800 megahertz portion of the radio system and get their networks tied in so that they have reliable communications as well. For the cell piece, they need to come down into the system and provide not only the materials, but they are also part of the approval design process, which our engineering groups are communicating closely with them. And then they are coming down to do a final acceptance test on the carrier systems and then making any optimization moves as required. Talk about some of the risks. We do have quite a few that we're working to manage through. Of course, first and foremost is the project time frame. As we identified earlier, we have close to a four-year program for the underground tunnels. We understand that we need to try and bring that in as much as possible. We're also dependent on being able to secure tower leases at the 22 sites that we talked to earlier in the slide. We don't anticipate any major problems, but we are working with outside entities. The cable installation, the tunnel access always continues to be a challenge. Even with us working with internal crews, we are trying to coordinate with other projects like SafeTrack to ensure that we're not causing any delays in their program and vice versa. The radio design for the tunnel is another piece. In order to move this project along in the time frame that we were given, we actually had to take on a lot of the engineering work internally. So in essence, WMATA is going to own the design work for the below ground. We have multiple contracts and multiple interfaces between those contracts that we have to continually work through between the cellular consortium, the radio contractor that will actually provide the radio infrastructure, and again, the various jurisdictions. Getting vehicles made available. Of course, bringing in the 7K rail fleet has certainly helped ease some of the restrictions on getting those cars. But we do have to take the cars out of service in order to get the radio work done. We can only take out so many without impacting availability. Same thing with the bus fleets. Getting frequencies, we have gotten commitments from the FCC and the Region 20 local groups on allocating those frequencies to us in the 700 megahertz band. However, we can't officially apply to them until we have the physical property addresses identified, and that won't happen until we secure leases. And then, of course, there are other risks as well. Next steps with the project, we're continuing our tunnel dash design effort and the tunnel installation work. We anticipate also awarding the 700 megahertz radio contract by the end of this year. And shortly thereafter, we'll start to work on securing some of these tower lease sites. We are also placing orders for vehicle radios right after award so that we can begin the vehicle installation as soon as possible. We'll continue our risk mitigation strategies for both the above ground and below ground. And we'll continue to work with our jurisdictional partners to get the 800 megahertz system up as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Wunder. Time for discussion. Any questions or comments? Ms. Medberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wunder, I'm curious, implications for the central communications system, or center, in terms of infrastructure, costs, capital projects related to this work. On slide 4 or 5, I saw there's new master sites and new consoles, I guess, that go in. Would that, are those costs separate from the work you're doing now, or is that included into, it's all included?
Thank you, Mr. Wunder. I really appreciate it. I just would like to understand your role on this project and kind of like the project team that we have on an internal basis that's working on this. And then secondly, if you could just, we had a schedule maybe, I guess, like 9 months ago, and I would just like to know if we are on that schedule now that we had previously.
Okay. I'll make sure I address that in two parts, and if I skip something, please let me know. For the first part, I'm the overall project manager for the radio and cellular project. I'm overseeing all the work involved with both the below ground construction as well as all the work for the above ground and the vehicle installation. So I'm pretty much seeing everything through. I have a project management team that works closely with me, with dedicated professionals. I have our internal engineering group under Marshall Epler, who is our deputy director over comm engineering. He's got, I think, 8 engineers that are working with him. We also have our force account, FACP group, under the direction of Joe Fowler. His team is directly responsible for the installation efforts associated with the below ground. He has a team of about 12 individuals, and then we are utilizing a staff augmentation contract of about 20 to 30 more to help with the physical installation activities in the tunnel. So that's kind of give you an idea of the internal crews that make up the project team.
I'm sorry, and that this is your sole responsibility?
This is my only
project. This is it?
Yes.
This is all you're 100% on it?
Yeah. Okay. Pretty much have to. It's as big as it is, I really don't have the bandwidth for much else. As to your second question, I believe that initially we were looking at, I want to say somewhere around 2019 for initial completion of the tunnel piece. when that schedule was put together at that point, the only portion of work that we really had solidified was the radio portion of work, which only included the one radiating cable. I'm sure you probably had the information available to you. We actually didn't get signed into an agreement with the carrier consortium until February of this year. So there was a whole additional scope of work that wasn't included at the time that that schedule was put together.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Strickland. So this question is, these questions come from chart 8, the schedule, the installation schedule. So after this year, it appears that you're clearly going to move from one to one. I presume that's because you're using the same team. It begs the immediate obvious question, could we not deploy more resources to facilitate this being done more quickly?
We are. We're definitely looking at that. Part of the issue that we were contending with up until recently was just getting all the available track equipment available to us, as well as operators, so that we could start breaking those teams out. As we go through the engineering portion is kind of one of the pieces that's going to help dictate how we're able to break this up. Our engineering crews are literally only about a step ahead right now in terms of getting the design work complete for the tunnels. We've deployed a new technology. It's called LIDAR scanning, which is doing basically a laser scan of our entire tunnel system. They're actually out in the system right now doing these tunnel scans. Our hope is that we're going to get 3D graphical representations of the tunnels that the engineers can use to help expedite the engineering process. As we get more and more of this stuff designed, we can start looking at how we can branch out the crews, maybe segregate it where we have one crew that's doing the cable management system and another crew that's coming back and doing the cable. So we definitely are trying to consider every opportunity.
So along those lines, you alluded to SafeTrack being a challenge. It would also appear, maybe this is a question for Mr. Wiedefeld, is it also not an opportunity to maybe coordinate some of that work when you do have complete access to an area? And I'm looking at a few of the scheduled items that are falling outside of SafeTrack remaining surges, and it would seem like it would be a great opportunity to coordinate a lot of work when access is pretty unfettered. Yeah.
We attempted that during the first part of the surges, and basically found that we were moving at different speeds. And in fact, we were getting in each other's way, so that's why we started to pull it apart. It's one of the things that I heard apparently came up in an earlier meeting. We got to document the types of things that we want to be doing with these extra hours, and this would fit into that category.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Dorsey. Ms. Goldman.
Thank you. Mr. Wunder, thank you for your report. It's very informative. In the 3 years that I've been on the board, this is one of the issues and projects that I've heard about continually, and it's good to see finally after 36 months that we're actually making some progress. So in your implementation schedule, which is the same chart, 39 to 44, this one that Mr. Dorsey was referring to, and the installation is sort of in different places. It's sort of here and then in a different little spots here and there, but it begins in November of this year, and then it begins to pick up speed in April of next year. My question is, are you in charge of the implementation program as far as making customers and riders aware of which sections, when they're lit up and on, that riders will know that they now have Wi-Fi service, cell service, on a particular segment? Is that within your jurisdiction and implementation plan, or is that someone else's responsibility?
The cell carriers maintain preference to be able to put out to the general public when service will be made available. Again, it's what we're providing is basically a neutral host backbone. Each of the carriers have to, in turn, hook their equipment up to that neutral host network. So that consortium is working to put that together. They really have the control over when that's launched.
Right. They have the control of when to turn it on. When to put the lights on, so to speak.
Correct.
What I'm asking is, are we planning to have announcements at Glenmont telling people, Glenmont to Silver Spring is now on. You can use your cell phone service. Are we planning to have, maps online or in the stations that show people, this sector is lit up. This sector is lit up, so that people who actually get on will now know that they can use their cell phone on particular sectors.
We'll work with the cell phone carriers and our communications. You know, I want him to focus on the delivery part of it, but we'll get our communications people to come up with a, you know, for a,
yeah, thank you. I hope we do that because I think it's kind of complex schedule, and we need to do something to let riders know when they actually have cell service on a particular sector or segment.
Agreed.
Ms. Costa?
I hesitate to ask this. It's kind of a follow-on to Mr. Augustine and Mr. Dorsey's question, and actually Mr. Goldman's also about the project management side. This is a really this is a really complicated project. On one of the slides, and I don't want to go back to it, there's a mention of a project integration role. Are you the project integrator, or do you have, or have we hired someone to sort of keep looking at this project, look at critical path items, maybe even do some kind of shared savings? Can you find some ways to do this faster? I mean, if this is all in-house, I'm a little worried that I'm just a little worried about delivery. I mean, I've had some bad experiences in my lifetime, but, you know, working projects like this.
Let me try on this one. So, as Mr. Wunder noted, this is a very high visibility project. So he gets a lot of attention from his supervisor, from me, and we're having almost monthly meetings with Mr. Wiederfeld. So his time in the spotlight is significant,
right,
in terms of making sure that he has everything that he needs, whether it's people or things, to make sure that what he's got laid out here as a schedule is achieved. So we're putting a lot of safety nets under and around him to make sure that he is successful. One of the advantages, so he didn't mention in his introduction, he actually worked for the carriers before he came to work for us. So he has some knowledge there that we can actually rely on for parts of what we're doing here. So that helps as well. But we're going to make sure that we're, whether it's integration, making sure you've got enough resources, so forth and so on, we're not going to let him fail on this.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Costa. Any further questions for Mr. Wunder or the rest of the team? Thank you, Mr. Wunder, for the presentation. It was excellent. One small piece of business to circle back to, need to approve the minutes from the September 8th committee meeting. With that, can I get a second on that?
Second.
All those in favor of the minutes as approved, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. And looks like we are actually able to return 7 minutes break between our next meeting.
Very good.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.